Happy Friday, wherever you guys are. I'm so glad that you're taking an hour off of your busy days to be with us. I'm Olivia Martin, and I'm a networking technical sales professional here in Microsoft. And I don't know that all my peers are on the call with us today, but generally they are. We're part of the same team, and we do the same kind of role here. So, before we get started, this, as you know, if you've been familiar with this call, if you guys are new, that's new information. If not, that's you hear this all the time. It's a call where customers and partners are welcome. There's also Microsoft employees on the call. So you might be tempted to ask questions that might go into the NDA realm. If that's the case, please don't. Reach out to me directly after the call if you want, or reach out to your account teams if you don't know how to reach me, and they will reach to me or to the product team or to whoever they need to reach to. Also, please free to use the IM. The audience is muted for the duration of the call. We will unmute you guys at the end for Q&A, but feel free to use the IM. I will try to keep an eye on it as I speak. And as Amit is going to be speaking, who is my guest today, I will also monitor it for him if he doesn't seize it. And the agendas in general are posted at aka.ms/mna, and the sessions, I've added a new short URL there to make it easier for you to guys to get there, is aka.ms/mna-ch9. This is where you'll find the recording, and this recording will be posted later today or sometime this weekend. Little update. Well, yeah, I put a little bit of emotion in there. We're going on a hiatus for the summer, but you can still watch the archives, as I just told you. All the previous sessions are there, and please keep. Every now and then, and so for those of you who are following me on LinkedIn, you know that I'm posting the agendas when they happen. You can also just go to that link, and I will email you when the session restarts, probably around end of summer, August, September timeframe. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of new things to say by that time, because well, in 2 months, engineering can accomplish a lot of things, and there's Ignite coming, so we're working on a lot of very exciting things that I very much look forward to be able to share with you. So, real quick, the agenda for today, like it was kind of the introduction and new things in Azure Networking this month, and we have a special guest with us, which is Amit Srivastava, who is our program manager for the Application Gateway. I hope, Amit, I said your last name correctly. If not, apologize for this. And then there's going to be an open Q&A at the end. So, without further ado, what's new in Azure Networking in this month? Well, I think it's a very exciting thing. Prior to this, we had like two, three, in fact, we had three SKUs for VPN gateways. Now we have four, but we mostly have much more performance. The basic one stays pretty much as is with 100 megabits per second, but the higher performance we had before had only 200 megabits per second, which in some use cases was a little bit slow. But now you can go up to 1.25 gigabits per second on an encrypted connection. So that's pretty interesting. And of course, maybe you need less than that. You choose the SKU that works for you. But there's more to it than that. There's also new crypto support. So Diffie-Hellman Group 1.2, that was there before, but we've added 14.24. ECP 256 and ECP 384, which I believe are group 19 and 20. It's just new cryptography standards that we're supporting that for certain government institutions or maybe certain financial institutions, it was important that we could support 14 and 24. We're supporting it now. The other new thing that we're allowing you guys to do is to use an IPsec policy configuration. So you would use that to be able to statically configure what your connection, what your VPN connection will use in terms of phase one and phase two encryption and signature. So for those of you familiar with cryptography, you'll probably find a use for that. And the final thing that I think is super interesting is one of the limitations that was a little bit painful to say, to be honest, which was the fact that when you had take a policy-based VPN device, right? So in Azure, you are able to create a route-based VPN gateway and a policy-based VPN gateway. When you have a policy-based VPN gateway, you can only have one tunnel. And one tunnel doesn't scale a lot. You don't have to tell me. We know that. We've heard that, heard this loud and clear. Now, what's possible to do going forward is to have, and just before I move to what we can do now, is before the choice of which policy or route-based VPN gateway device you would use would depend largely on what you have at home. So there are certain devices that simply did not support route-based VPNs, and therefore you had to choose the static or policy-based VPN gateway in Azure to be able to connect it, which limits you to one tunnel. In certain cases it works, in certain other cases it's just not enough. So what you're able to do today is that you are able to have the same device you have on-prem, the policy-based device, or the device that does not really support route-based VPNs, and connect it to a route-based gateway in Azure by using something we call traffic selectors. Right? So for those of you who are familiar with maybe Cisco devices, it's a world that I've been very familiar with in the past. There's an ACL, an access control list, that identifies what the interesting traffic is, quote unquote, or the crypto domain, or the traffic selector, however you want to call it. It just makes that, because the difference between a route-based and a policy-based VPN is that a route-based VPN by default has a traffic selector of any to any, whereas a policy-based VPN, it's specified, right? On-prem you have 10.10/16, and in the cloud you have 192.168/16. So that is part of the IPsec negotiations. Now, what's possible to do is to to use your traffic selector, or to use the traffic selector option that actually allows you to connect a policy-based device to a route-based VPN. It's not going to make it dynamic. It still is static, because the nature of this thing is static. There's nothing you can do about this. You need to have another device, or a device that actually supports dynamic routing if you need to do that. But I thought it's interesting news, and it will enable to have multiple of these devices, just like if they were route-based devices, connect to a single gateway. So that's the new things that I have for this month. Hopefully in August or September, I'll have tons of other things to share with you. Now, all of that I've just said just been recently released in the last few days. So it is possible that you don't have the tools to create those VPNs in PowerShell. If that's the case, you just have to update PowerShell. I've done it this morning, in fact, just before that call, to make sure that it works. And the new commands are there, and you can only do it in PowerShell for the time being. Hopefully in the future, it will be doable in the portal as well. So, without further ado, let me just pass it away to my friend Amit, who is with us today.
Hey, thanks, Olivier. So, yeah, it seems that the control transition worked, Olivier.
Okay, so we're in a good day.
Yes. So, hi, everyone. My name is Amit Srivastava. I am a program manager in Azure Networking, and I look after Application Gateway, Layer 7 Load Balancer, and I also look at Azure Resource Manager and Network Resource Provider for most of the hybrid services, including VPN, ER, Application Gateway, and so on. So today, I wanted to give an overview of the capabilities, the functionality of Application Gateway, and also do a little bit of sneak preview into things which we are going to release very shortly. I'll also cover the Web Application Firewall, which is a new SKU with Application Gateway. So let's get started. Before going deep into Application Gateway itself, I wanted to just give you a sort of lay of land, the load balancer hierarchy in Azure. So one thing which most of you who have used Azure would be familiar with is that we have lots of building blocks or components. For example, in load balancing, we have Traffic Manager, which is our DNS-based load balancer, the Azure load balancer, which is exclusively at layer 4, and Application Gateway, which takes care of layer 7 load balancer. So there are three choices in load balancing. But the good news around that is that you can mix and match these primitives and make, instead of having one single device which does all of these things, we have these primitives and all of them play with each other. So you can use a traffic manager and an application gateway to take advantage of both capabilities. So Traffic Manager is the DNS-based load balancer. It operates at cross-region level mostly, offers you many routing choices. You can route between geographies based on failover or performance to get the lowest latency. You can have nested profiles. So you could have a policy defined, which is geographic in nature, and then you could have a nested policy within it, which is doing load distribution with a weight. So 90% of traffic could go to one endpoint within that geography and 10% to another, and so on. So that is usually not in the traffic manager is not in the data path. It is at the name resolution level. Then you have Azure Load Balancer. This is the load balancer which has been around for ever since the launch of Azure. It's layer 4 load balancer, operates on 5 tuple or 3 tuple and 2 tuple hashing, and works with TCP, UDP. It can do HTTP traffic as well, but it is not aware of the packets which are flowing through. It's not layer 7 aware. Now, since we launched the load balancers, there has been at least a couple of persistent asks from customers which were like high up there. One was SSL termination at the gateway to free up the backend VMs from both, costly crypto overhead, as well as not to do certificate management on each and every VM in the backend. So that was a consistent ask. The second was to get a true session affinity using cookies or some other mechanism, because in load balancer you can have a client affinity, but if your requests are all coming from, let's say, the same CDN or from coming from the same proxy, they will all get hashed to a single endpoint behind your load balancer, and that could run very hot. So Application Gateway was launched with SSL offload capabilities and cookie-based session affinity, and since then we have added quite a lot of features which I will go through. Before going all into that side, I also wanted to make sure that you understand that Traffic Manager and Load Balancer, these are infrastructure components in Azure. They are not deployed for a given customer or for a given tenant. Whereas Application Gateway is a dedicated deployment. When you ask for a layer 7 load balancer, it is always deployed in a VNet. At that time, we create a dedicated tenant and inject that tenant into the VNet in a given subnet within that VNet. So the instances which you get instantiate when you create an application gateway are dedicated deployment for that customer only. That is a difference which I wanted to highlight. Going forward, what are the features? As I was saying, we launched with SSL offload and cookie-based session affinity. Now, since that time, we have added quite a lot of features on the application gateway itself. We do SSL offload on the gateway, and then the logical next question is, can you control the SSL negotiation? What do you do about that? So we also added SSL policy. Now you can say on Application Gateway that allow TLS version 1.2, but don't allow, for example, 1.1 or 1.0. So that kind of SSL policy control is available at a central location on Gateway today. Very popular ask around that has been, can you also control the Cypher Suite negotiation and priority ordering of the Cypher Suites, right? So we have heard that feedback from customers. We are very shortly going to release the Cypher Suite control. That is one of the sneak preview kind of things which I was talking about at the start. So with that, we would have enhanced our SSL policy configuration. So you can select the TLS version as well as what Cypher Suites to present and the priority order of those Cypher Suites. So we will also have, apart from Cypher Suite, we'll also do our own Cypher policies. So, for example, we will launch with a couple of policies which we have taken feedback from our security board, and we have come up with our prescribed Cypher policy, which we think is the best suited for most of the web applications. Now, you can just choose that cipher policy, or you can take the cipher policy and then go and modify it, customize it further. So that support is upcoming. End-to-end SSL has been available for more than 5-6 months now. Typically, when SSL offload happens at the gateway, the traffic from the gateway to the backend is over plain text HTTP. That is okay for most customers because maybe their deployments are within that VNet and they don't have a public endpoint. But we heard from other customers who do not want even the backend traffic to flow over plain HTTP, maybe because their backend is outside of the VNet, or they want extra security. So we do re-encrypt traffic. So it's not a SSL transparent bypass. The SSL is terminated at the gateway, and then we re-encrypt the traffic to the backend and you know, establish an end-to-end SSL flow. Now, cookie-based session affinity has been available. This is a gateway-managed cookie. If you turn this on, when a new request comes, we inject a cookie, and as long as that cookie is presented, those requests, subsequent requests, are guaranteed to go to that same virtual machine in the backend or any other IP which you have chosen. We also support multi-site hosting. So in the diagram, you can see contoso.com and fabricam.com as two distinct sites having their own distinct certificates. They are both hosted on the same WIP. We take care of, we use the HTTP host header in case of just plain HTTP requests, and SNI server name indication extension in case of HTTPS requests to decide which of the two certificates to choose, or which backend pool to route to. So you can load up to 20 root domains, or you could have up to 20 subdomains as well. So you could have like blog.contoso.com and api.contoso.com or images.contoso.com, 20 subdomains like that loaded on the same application gateway. So that gives you, instead of you trying to host each of these domains or subdomains with their own load balancer, as would be the case with ELB probably, you can pack them together into a single gateway, and then you can route them independently to different pools. We do URL path-based routing. So in this example, you could have video slash star going to one particular pool and images slash star going to another backend pool, and you can scale these pools independently. So this opens quite a lot of scenarios for customers. There are a couple of announcements on this as well. I'll come to the end of it. But we do URL-based routing. We offer very rich diagnostics. So we have access and performance logs. So every request which comes to the gateway, we log the many key features on that request. I'll cover that more in detail. We also have with WAF, with Web Application Firewall, we have a Web Application Firewall log. We added support for backend health pool. So you could see in real time how your backends are behaving, whether they are healthy or unhealthy, and what does our probe think. WAF GA is not upcoming, it is GA already. So there is a little mistake over there, but let's go further. So on the connectivity, I wanted to cover a few things which typically are not clear to the customers. They're not aware that what can be part of the backend pool. So our backend pool is limited only to IP connectivity. So as long as the backend is reachable from application gateway, it can be part of the backend pool. So which means that you're not limited to VMs within the same VNet. You could use internal IPs if they are within the same VNet, because within the VNet, typically if you have not put NSGs blocking traffic, the VNet is open, right? So any instance of application gateway in that VNet can use the internal IPs to go to any VM in the VNet. So you could, your backend pool could be comprised of all these internal IPs. If you have done any VNet peering, or even VPN peering between, like VPN IPsec tunnel between two VNets within the region or across the region, then you can use private IP addresses as backend pool of these gateways. You can use public IPs anytime. You can use FQDN as long as it resolves. Your cloud services can be outside the VNet, in which case you would use the FQDN or public IP. Your cloud service can be within inside the VNet, in which case you can use the private IP of the instances or the public IP, the one public IP of the load balancer. If you have an ER tunnel, if you have a VPN or an ER connectivity to your on-premises, and that connectivity IP reachability works, then you could have all these VMs on premises also being part of your backend pool. So the key message is that it's not restricted to a region or a cluster or a VNet. As long as there is IP reachability, anything can be part of your backend pool. Now, of course, there would be latency issues. Let's say you can send the traffic from application gateway to an externally hosted, microservice or a publicly available service somewhere. And if that's far away, then of course there will be a latency hit. But key thing is that anything can be part as long as there is reachability. At least I see the colors as all white, so I think there is.
Yeah, there's an issue with that. So keep talking. I'm gonna try to fix this as we speak. Apologies for this, guys.
Okay.
And the deck that will be posted will have the colors fixed.
Okay, sure. So coming to SSL management, as I was saying, most of the features I have covered already. You have a central place of doing SSL management. You can do multiple sites on the application gateway. I see a question already on app services. The good answer over there is very shortly upcoming. I'll cover it in my last slide. But we can do a little bit of private preview for whoever is interesting on app services. So moving on to this slide, we do SSL policies on the gateway. You can do SSL protocol version today, but very shortly we will also be supporting Cypher suites. On the backend side, we do the re-encryption. And there is one thing which I wanted to highlight, which sometimes surprises a few customers, right? That application gateway will only talk to backends either if they have the same CNAME in the backend pool set and the backend certificate, or if that certificate is whitelisted with application gateway. So you can have, let's say you are coming with abc.com, and if the backend pool presents abc.com, that is fine. But if it presents something different, then you have to whitelist, or if it could have a test certificate as well, in which case also you would need to whitelist then those certificates. So that ensures that we talk only to the known backends. Moving forward, I have covered most of the multi-site and URL-based routing scenarios. So we support up hosting up to 20 domains or subdomains on the application gateway, and we also support URL-based routing. Now, the key question over here is, clarification is that we do all that on a single public WIP, right? So we rely on host headers and SNI support. So URL-based routing, we can have up to 20 backend pools. If you're aware, each of these backend pools can be governed by their own HTTP setting. So you could have a backend pool which says, okay, all my requests are cookie enabled, and they should, the incoming traffic is on port 80, but map that traffic from port 80 to port, for example, 8080 on the backend, and enable cookie affinity. Also, you could say the request timeout from backend is 4 minutes for this backend pool. Now, you can have a second backend pool which is completely independent, has completely independent settings from the first backend pool. So you could say traffic is coming for blogs.contoso.com, the traffic was going to 8080, but for api.contoso.com, send the traffic to 9090 in this second backend pool. The request timeout over here is maybe a little higher. It is 5 minutes over here, and I do not need cookie affinity on this backend pool. So you could do quite a lot of mix and match. You could even do something like, I have the same backend pool, but I want to run two different services on the backend pool, which is a very common scenario with VM scale sets, or even with if you have a backend pool with big beefy servers and you are running more than two or three applications on that same backend pool. So you can have one backend pool which is running two services, for example, 8080 and 9090. and you have a contoso.com and a fabricam.com and you want to route them to the same backend pool, you could do that as well. So you could say, here are my two listeners for Contoso and fabricam.com. Here is my one backend pool. And I have two HTTP settings. One is sending traffic to 8080 and one is sending traffic to 9090. And now you can configure two rules on application gateway and say contoso.com traffic, go to this backend pool using 8080, and fabricam.com go to the same backend pool but use port 9090. And then you can, you know, do all kind of thing that on the first backend pool you want cookie affinity on 8080 HTTP setting and not want it, and so on. So you could do those kind of things. You have multi-site support. As I was saying, we are doing application gateway today exposes a single public IP or a single internal IP or both. It can expose at the same time. So you can have an application gateway which is running with public IP WIP1 and an internal IP which is static. And they are both routing different traffic to different backend pools at the same time. Because we are running on one public IP, we rely on HTTP host headers, HTTP 1.1 or SNI extension to decide which certificate to use to decrypt the traffic and where to send the traffic to. So this has been, the SNI adoption has been increasing. There are a few legacy browsers which do not support SNI, and chief of them being Internet Explorer on XP and some very, very old Android browsers. So we have heard a few customers ask about, could you do multiple IPs on the gateway? That is something which is on our roadmap, but I wanted to highlight that today we are doing all that on a single public IP. Going forward, we do support custom probes. So when you launch an application gateway and add something to the backend pool, it straight away comes with something called a default probe. So that is the default probe which sends probes to the backend and takes note of their health status. By default, it expects to send, let's say that you had configured an IP address, it would send a HTTP request to that IP. There is no other path. It would just send HTTP and then that connectivity to that particular IP, and it expects a 200 OK back. Now, that works for most scenarios, but if there are customers who want to override that, then you can use custom probes. Then you get lots more control over the path on which to send the probe pings. What is the duration, the frequency on which you send these probes? And you can also do other things like what is the threshold when you will count a backend probe to be unhealthy, right? A backend to be unhealthy. So if it fails five probes, it is unhealthy, and you can increase it to 10 or decrease it, and so on. We are doing a little more enhancements to the probe as well. Again, this is very shortly going to be available. You will have more control, even more control than what custom probes offer today. So you could not only just do a 200 OK, but you can also say, do a quick parse on the response from the backend server. And if it matches this particular string, then consider it healthy. Otherwise, do not consider it healthy. And you can do microservice, as I was saying. You can have the same backend pool running multiple applications, in which case you are using different HTTP settings and different, you know, custom probes to probe the same application on these two VMs. So, for example, you could have a situation where VM1 is unhealthy for port 8080, but it is healthy for port 80, right? And in that case, you know, the traffic for service 1 will continue to flow, whereas service 2 traffic would not flow to that VM, which is considered unhealthy. Moving forward, we offer quite a lot of diagnostics. This is all integrated with the Azure Monitor. The internal name for that is Shoebox, but it's called Azure Monitor. When you go to Application Gateway, you can turn on diagnostics, and you see three choices today. You have access logs, you have performance logs, and if you are on the WAFs queue, you also have a WAF log. So access logs, there is an example of both of them. You can take a look at the schema, but access logs register each and every request and response along with quite a lot of data. So it says what was the client and client port which sent the request, what was the response status, how much time it took from the time we got request to the time we sent the last packet of the response out, bytes in, bytes out, and we will continue to enhance this so that you get more control over visibility in the kind of traffic you are seeing. Performance logs, on the other hand, is a logging of how your instances of application gateway themselves are doing. So you deploy multiple instances of application gateway for availability, high availability, and scalability. This log gives you how each of those instances are doing in application gateway. So it gives you information like, for each 1 minute window, what is the average throughput it is seeing, how many failed requests were there, how many healthy requests were there, how many healthy hosts were there, and how many hosts was that instance considering as unhealthy in its backend pool, what was an average of the latency it was seen. So this gives you a view on how the instances themselves are performing. We are also integrated with Meetrix, which expose throughput today, but they will expose more things going forward in future. So you could, when you see the portal, you can see a graphical representation of what is the throughput as a chronological graph. So you can see how your throughput has been varying over time, and Meetrix gets that data from these performance logs and aggregates it across instances. So that enables you to do more things. You can set an alerting. So on the same Meetrix API using Azure Monitor, you can set up an alert which says, anytime my throughput goes beyond a certain number for a certain time period, send an alert, which could be an email. It would show up on portal, but you can also integrate it with web jobs and do almost anything, right?
I was just on that, Amit, it's super interesting. Yesterday I was doing a demo on what's it called? A network watcher, where there was a trigger that was set on Azure Function.
Correct.
And so that's, if you set the trigger on Azure Function, then you could start sniffing the packets to your instance that's not responding fast enough and email you something after to tell you, here's the trace. You might want to look at this because it's long.
Yes, very powerful. There are two, you know, interesting scenarios which you can do straight away. For example, you could have a web job which integrates with and sends an SMS or some kind of alert. Another interesting thing you could do is, my throughput has exceeded this number, trigger this web job, which in turn calls the same application gateway and increases the instance count to something bigger, right? So that is like a lesser version of auto scaling. If you want. So you can do alerts and web jobs with Meetrix. When I cover WAF, I'll go to WAF logs as well. WAF logs basically log each and every time the WAF has triggered a request, whether in detection or protection mode. We also released backend health logs. So now you can do a real-time check of when you issue this backend health log, it sends a request at that moment in time and goes and actually sees how your backend instances are and reports back which instances are healthy and which are unhealthy. So going forward, web application firewall is a new SKU on the application gateway. We have the standard module which contains all the features which I mentioned, and then we have a new WAF SKU which contains everything from the standard SKU, but also includes web application firewall. Now, the web application firewall is built using Mod Security Core rule set. We support today both 2.2.9 and 3.0 versions of the Mod Security Core rule set. Now, both of these versions come pre-configured with the core rule set, which offers baseline protection from most of the common web vulnerabilities like SQL injection attacks, cross-site scripting, local file inclusion, remote file inclusion, OS command injection. I'll cover them a little, but you can see that the baseline protection offers for most generic protocol attacks, layer 7 attacks, and the two biggest categories of SQL injection and cross-site scripting attacks. Again, this is integrated with Application Gateway, so it is fully managed by Azure. It is available only on the ARM side, it is not available in the classic model. We offer it in two modes today, detection and prevention mode. The names are self-evident. In detection mode, you just run either one or up to 20 websites on the application gateway, and you can protect all those 20 websites with the WAF. And in detection mode, it will just silently log any intrusion it sees so that customers can take a look at it and see if they are being attacked. In prevention mode, it actually terminates that connection, sends a 403 back, an unauthorized 403 back to the customer and stops that connection, stops that attack. In both cases, the logs it generates that says gives rich details on what exactly, and the details are pretty self-evident. You can take a look at it. They are very descriptive. They say they will tell you which client was trying to do this attack, what was the IP, what was the port, what was the exact request URI. But then it also says which rule was triggered in core rule sets. It will give you more details on what exactly was the pattern which was matched if it was a pattern-based attack. So if it could say that, hey, I matched SQL or OS command injection and the customer was trying to do LS or an exec command, and it will print that. And it will even show you which file number, which line number matched that attack pattern. So it does quite a lot of extensive logging with that, and all of these logs are integrated with Azure Monitor, so they can flow right from there in a JSON format to the customer's storage account, and then customer is in full control of that storage, so they can import that into their own any kind of CM or any other integration systems. They can run a Hadoop query on it or integrate it with Elk or other things. We integrate those logs with OMS as well, so customers can do OMS log analytics on these logs, not only WAF but other logs as well, the access logs and performance logs. So you can go and do a OMS log analytics query and see how many logs you were how many particular types of attack you are seeing. Now
by the way, Amit, there was a question in the IM by Eddie. I don't know if you can read it, but it was, any work being done to support App Gateway as an ingress controller for Kubernetes?
I see. On the ingress controller for Kubernetes, we are in discussion with both ACS and Kubernetes side. I will have more to share probably in 3 or 4 weeks time, right? So we are looking with the teams. And it's in early stages of discussion right now. Okay, going forward, as I was mentioning, we offer 2.2.9 and 3.0. Sorry, I'm just looking at the last question. Now, when we did our preview, we also got a lot of feedback from customers that, hey, what happens that if I get a false positive? So there are a couple of points I wanted to make. First of all, CRS 3.0 reduces the number of false positives. If you go to core rule set, the claim is that it reduces by up to 90% in false positives. So that is our recommendation, that you start with CRS 3.0 unless you you absolutely have to use 2.2.9 and you need that any particular rule in that. And the second thing is, based on the feedback, now we have done a bunch of modifications so that you have more configurability choices. For example, you can, here I'm just showing that each rule set, for example, CRS 2.2.9 or 3.0 is comprised of a rule group which has, for example, cross-site scripting or SQL injection, which themselves are comprised of many, many different rules. These are granular, fine-grained rules targeting a specific scenario in SQL injection, for example. So we offer two types of configurability today. You can say that, hey, I don't have a SQL or any kind of database in my backend, and therefore I don't need SQL injection. So you can turn off an entire rule group and you can say that I don't need, for example, SQL injection or LFI or a crawler detection is not applicable to me. So you can turn that off, or you can say SQL injection is good. And there is, however, one particular rule in SQL injection which is not applicable to me or is generating a lot of false positives for me, and therefore turn that particular rule off. Yeah, so you can do that through portal or PowerShell today. at both granularities. We are going to continue to enhance the configurability, and we will add more choices so you could do more you know, finer grained, even at a rule level. You could do in future more things like today, for example, a rule can say that if I have you know, your file size limit, if you exceed this number of headers, or your total quantity of your the total size of your headers exceed a certain number, I will count that as a attack. In future, we will offer more configurability over each and every one of these, so that you can see you can have more control. So those are on WAF configurations. I covered most of it. In
there's also
of the
questions
time, I just want to go a little faster.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there was a question on the yeah, exactly.
Listing. Yeah. So let me ask a little bit more. When you say URL whitelisting, you're not talking about outbound traffic. You're talking about inbound traffic, and you want to say that allow everything which is on abc.com, don't allow WAF. Okay. So, yeah. So that is something which is on the roadmap. We are working on three different things over there, and I don't have exact dates on any of them, but we are considering three different scenarios. One is blacklisting and whitelisting based on IP. Second is blacklisting and whitelisting based on string-based matches. So you could say match a particular header. So you could say that if user agent is so-and-so in my request header, whitelist or blacklist it. And then the URL based, as you said. I do not have exact dates, but we have that in our roadmap. Okay, I have covered most of it. I'll just go through a little quicker. So the logs go into the logs. The WAF logs can flow into Event Hub. These are customer storage event or events, or it could go to OMS Log Analytics, or all three. And we also integrate with Azure Security Center (ASC). There's a screenshot. You can see that when you go to Azure Security Center, it can scan your subscription, and it can say, here are the 20 vulnerabilities I detected in your web applications. Go protect them with WAF. And when you do a WAF protection, you get a choice today. You can choose Microsoft WAF, the Application Gateway WAF. And once you choose it from Azure Security Center, it implicitly is aware of Security Center integration. So all the logs which I talked about also flow to the Security Center. So you can see in Security Center, I don't know whether it's very visible to you, but you can see that it has generated, I had a WAF, and it has generated 51 medium alerts over 2 days, right? And it shows you in a graphical manner what are the top you know, rules which were triggered, and how many times it was triggered, and then you can go and look at more details. All those details, this is nothing special on the Azure Security Center time side. All those logs also flow to OMS, customer storage account, and Event Hub if you so choose. This is another integration point. So now you can have a central security center where you can see not just WAF, but other you know, things on your subscription as well. And it that integration is now complete and publicly available for everyone. Now, this is my final slide. There are a few things which I have mentioned. I mean, we have a long roadmap, both on the ADC side. There are a bunch of things we are trying to do, as well as on the WAF side. There are quite a lot of enhancements we have in mind. I have intentionally only mentioned things which are very, very close to being in production. So these are things which I have very high confidence that it will be there with, you know, with the PowerShell or through templates at least, and portal will catch up in a few weeks after that. But I have very confidence, high confidence, and that's why I am able to say that HTTP to HTTPS redirects, both on a global or a path-based redirect. This is actually available through Azure Resource Manager templates today in production. So you can say, here is my site, let's say amit.com, and any traffic which is coming on HTTP, just do a global redirect to HTTPS. It was a very, very often asked ask from customers, so we support that. We have done more than that. You can also do a path-based redirect. So you can say, hey, I have amit.com, but Everything is HTTP is fine, but if the customer goes to anything which is slash cart slash star, for example, then you know redirect him to HTTPS because that's my shopping cart area. So you can do either at a global redirect or path based redirect. I have mentioned this as HTTP to HTTPS redirect, but in reality, it is a listener to listener redirect. So you could do something like, if the traffic is coming from contoso.com, send it to contoso.org or vice versa. But most often we have seen customers using asking at least for HTTP to HTTPS redirection. It's more than that. You can do any listener to any listener redirection or even redirect to an external site. Cypher Suite control, I mentioned, we will allow both Cypher Suite configurability. You can remove ciphers, for example, 3DES ciphers or any other cipher you consider insecure. And you can also say what is the priority order in which to present the ciphers during the negotiation. We will also have our own standard cipher suite, which we will which the customer can opt onto. These would be the standards, and then you can further customize them depending on your choice. Connection draining has been a very, very often asked feature. So this is also very close to being released. All of these features are, as we speak, going into production in various stages. So connection draining allows completion of in-flight requests before a VM from backend is taken away from the backend pool. So for example, you have 10 VMs in your backend pool and you want to take a VM off for patching or something, some other routine maintenance, you can turn on draining on that particular Azure Stack. Again, I don't have a very good answer. We are talking to the Stack team. It is governed by both us and the Azure Stack team. We are definitely in discussion with them. I don't have a timeline as of now on Stack. So on connection draining, you can turn on connection draining to a backend pool, and anytime a server instance is taken out for patching or maintenance, we will let the existing connections to complete, let the response go before we drop that server off out of the pool. So it will not be an abrupt, your clients would not see a broken connection because you took something off the backend pool. So that allows for better management and all. But one key thing over here is that this is a layer 4 connection being completed. It is not your HTTP session, which could be many sessions lasting multiple hours or many requests. So it allows for a completion of in-flight connections. Okay, integration with Azure Web Apps was asked. I just want to cover it in 1 or 2 minutes on what we are doing, and we are very close to releasing this as well. It will support both. Just having a normal HTTP Azure Web Apps or end-to-end SSL with Azure Web Apps. With the GA of WAF, this was one of very popular asks. So what we are doing is, today the problem happens is that when you have a backend which is multi-site like Azure Web Apps, we get into host conflicts. So Azure Web Apps expects the host header or SNI extension to say, for example, abc.azurewebsites.net, and you can put a custom domain over that, but application gateway preserves the incoming host header. So if you have abc.azurewebsites.net and you configure a custom domain abc.com and you send a request from internet to abc.com, which goes to application gateway, we preserve that header and send it to backend Azure Web Apps as abc.com, and that leads to a conflict. So we are fixing that. We will have advancements to the backend HTTP setting where you could say that don't preserve the incoming host header, but derive the host header from the website's name. So no matter what incoming host header is, we will use abc.azurewebsites.net, for example, and send the request to backend with that header or that SNI extension. So that will fix the Azure Web Apps problem. So now you would have, you would enable both putting a WAF in front of Azure Web Apps Or you could also have a standard application gateway which has multiple web apps on its backend pool, and you can do more availability that way. So those are the things which we are very, very confident of releasing very shortly. And that is everything. We have a lot of other things in plan, but I have intentionally kept it only to things which are coming in a few weeks' time. And that is it. Any questions? I would be happy to answer.
Yeah, there was just one from Anil asking, is that includes app service environment?
Yeah, so app service environments will also be supported. So all web app environments, the standard web apps or app service environment would be supported with the new changes.
Okay, and is there a timeline that we are able to share? That's being asked by Anil Nanda.
Okay, so we will have the there are two or three moving pieces to it. By end of June, we will have the capability to be usable with ARM templates for sure. The PowerShell and CLI have their publication schedule, so they will come up either in early July time frame. Whenever is the next PowerShell and CLI schedule, right? And Portal is going to be a few weeks after that. So from a production availability, we will have in by June time frame, consider it that you can opt in, you can use templates to get the work done, and we will release Portal partial CLI in July time frame.
All right, and everybody, thanks for having been there. I did unmute the audience, so if anybody wants to get off mute and ask a question, now would be a good time to do so. And thank you very much, Amit, by the way. There was one from Steve DiStefano who was asking earlier, anything special in OMS for the WAF, or is that really what is going on in Azure Security Center, or is it really just part of the log analytics he described?
Yeah,
Yeah.
he addressed it. I think he addressed it in like following slides. Yep.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. And by the way, you've come a long way, Amit. This is great. Very, very. I remember looking at the feature, the product when it was in early preview, and I can't believe the amount of work you've accomplished here. And I'm saying that not to blow smoke around, but I've done other WAFs, marketplace vendor WAFs. And it's extremely difficult. There's like a whole knowledge base and a whole learning path, and it's nice to see a product inside the Azure, resource family that accomplishes a lot of the same goals. So thank you very much.
Sure. And yeah, I have kept things over here with, which we are going to release very, very shortly, but the WAF is, as you say, it is quite an ocean, and we are continuing our investment over there. We will add more custom rules in future, and we'll continue that journey. Cool. Thanks, everyone.
All right, there's one last is it in the plans to integrate App Gateway in some fashion with ACS? I guess that's the container service.
Yes, we are
Or
in discussion.
okay,
It's
then
early stage for me.
you mentioned that before. All right. So if there's no more questions, we'll just wish you a super great weekend, everybody. Thanks again for your time, and keep I'll keep spamming you in a couple weeks' time to make sure that you show up in fall. So thanks everyone. Thank you so much, Amit, and have everybody have yourselves great weekends.